Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud.
Many of you have been following this election. Oh my goodness, I don't think anybody can get away without following the election. And yet we are all guided to believe that President Trump is the only president ever in the history of America that has ever had a problem in an election. This has never happened before. He has no right to continue. Anybody that talks derogatory about this election being fraudulent needs to be put in jail, as Governor Whitmer now wants to put the attorneys who were challenging the election in investigated. Why is this happening? Basically, I believe it's because we don't know our history. And you're listening to Karen Schoen, and this is the Prism of America's Education. And one thing we have to learn, and one thing we have to make sure that our children learn, is our history, because history has a way of repeating itself. And when it comes to history and repeating itself, I like to talk to experts. And my fave expert is Bill Federer, who has an incredible website called the American Minute. And I really suggest that each of you go and put your email address on Bill's website, AmericanMinute.com, and get his newsletters, because he has a unique way of bringing the past forward in hopes that we will not repeat our same mistakes. The last article that Bill wrote was about the death of George Washington and the warning that he sent that has lasted centuries. Bill, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me. George Washington was an amazing person. How do you think he knew to give that message that we are still repeating today?
Well, he was an excellent student of human nature, and human nature wants to have power. St. Augustine called it libido dominandi, the lust to dominate. And so, you know, Cain kills Abel with a stone, but then you put some kids on a playground and one is the bully hogging the ball, and you put some junior high girls in a clique and one of them is the diva. And you put some people in the woods, one of them is an Indian chief, and you put them in an inner city, one of them is a gang leader. And you just multiply this out, and you have political leaders that rule as gang leaders. And if you're their friend, you are worth something. If not, you're an enemy, and they will use the power of the state to come after you and destroy you. And that's the norm. Ancient Israel, when they came out of Egypt for 400 years, they did not have a king. And so that was the first instance on a national level where you had a nation with millions of people and no king. And it worked because every citizen was taught the law and every citizen was personally accountable to God to follow the law. And but anyway, so Washington was a student of human nature, and he saw this threat of power wanting to concentrate. If you've ever worn a hat and you take it off and then you still feel like the hat's on your head, it's like when America broke away from England, they were used to having a king dictating everything. And here they had taken the hat off and they were like, you mean we get to rule ourselves? But there was a certain segment of the country that was used to the government having a more dictatorial role. And, you know, that's what Washington warned of.
And that here's a little, is that why when he was asked to be a king, he said no?
Right. Well, there were several instances. One was the Newburgh conspiracy, where the army had not been paid for several years, and they were going to march on Washington, D.C., or sorry, New York, because New York was the original capital. And Washington shows up at the meeting and talks him out of it. And so he could have got on the horse and led them, and they would have all followed him. Another is he only served as president for two terms. There's nothing in the Constitution that limited a president to two terms. He could have been president for life, like many of these other countries. Simón Bolívar wanted to have a grand Colombia of all the Latin and South American countries. And it was going to be exactly like the United States, except he wanted to be president for life. And that messed up all of the negotiations, and the whole plan fell apart. But Washington just served two terms and set an example that everyone followed until Franklin Roosevelt got himself elected four times. And so then Congress passed the 22nd Amendment to limit a president to just two terms. But Washington sensed this, and he mentioned in his farewell address, 1796, and a fatal tendency to put in the place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority. They are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people, usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which lifted them to the unjust dominion. What's he talking about? Well,
isn't that what we're doing right now?
Yeah, every banana republic, you know, you got, Venezuela. And, you know, you had Hugo Chavez, who got, quote unquote, democratically elected. And once he was in, he destroyed democracy. He just, you know, took control of the news media so they couldn't say anything bad about him. He took control of the businesses. And basically, it's like climbing up into a treehouse and you pull the little rope ladder up behind you so that nobody else can climb up. You see this in Muslim countries, where we would get rid of Saddam Hussein or some leader, and then we'd give him a constitution and they would get their guy in. And then sure enough, he would consolidate power, so we would stay in. And it was just simply a one-time regime change. And so that Washington added the threat of foreign nations. We're seeing this with China.
Yes.
But he said that politicians would be tempted to betray their country to advance their political careers. He writes this: it opens the doors for foreign influence and corruption, which find a facilitated access to the government itself through channels of party passions. Thus, the policy and will of one country are subjected to the policy and will of another. So here we have China, you know, taking control of the Hollywood and the Disney and the, you know, all these different media outlets, and then giving to politicians, and then being involved in, you know, all the other. There was one Senator Feinstein, and her limo driver for 20 some odd years ended up being somebody from communist China. And so they would infiltrate and then gradually push their agenda. And then Washington, in his farewell address, warns of crises and how crises will be used to consolidate power away from the people. He says this leads at length to a more formal and permanent despotism. Disorders and miseries will incline the minds of men to seek security in the absolute power of an individual, turns his disposition to his own elevations on the ruins of public liberty. The spirit of encroachment tends to consolidate the powers of all departments in one, to create a despotism. And so that's this spirit of encroachment, where you see the federal government. Actually, a really good example are these governors, that there's a disorder, there's a misery, there's some crises, and these governors come in and say, well, we'll fix it. But in the process, they consolidate power and put themselves in charge permanently.
Isn't there has to be a way to stop doing that, and that would have to come, I guess, from the state legislators, who would be able to limit the power of their governors. Otherwise, we have little tyrants in 50 states dictating to people their own will. How does that work?
Yeah, so when you study apathy and usurpation, they sort of go together. That the nature of usurpation is there's somebody in government that does something they're not authorized to do. And the apathy of the people let them get away with it. And after they get away with it for a long enough period of time, that's the new rules. It's sort of like sandlot football, and somebody steps out of bounds, and then they say, no, the out of bounds was over here. And they finally say, okay, the out of bounds is over there. And then they step over another side. No, the out of bounds. And they keep moving the lines, right? And if you go along with it, that becomes the new line. And so that's the situation where the usurpation is they do something that in some emergency that they're not authorized to do. And people say, well, he wants to do something good. Let him get away with it. Well, that becomes the new standard. And so Washington also warned of this in his farewell address. He said, but let there be no change by usurpation, though in one instance, it's the instrument of good. It is the customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed. Usurpation must always overbalance in permanent evil any transient or temporary benefit that it can yield. So we got a transient temporary crisis. We want to benefit. And so we allow them to usurp it, but it's going to cause permanent evil to our form of government, which is the people being in charge. And even Ronald Reagan said that the health crisis is the perfect opportunity for power to be usurped, because nobody wants to go against it because they'll be labeled, you don't care about people's health. But in reality, it's a tactic that Hitler and the Soviet Union used, saying that we're going to guarantee national health care. But in the process, they decide who gets it and who doesn't get it. And then they end up killing off lots of people.
I think that's what most people fail to realize, especially Democrats that can think they are liberal and probably never read the New Democrat platform, because this is exactly what is happening right now. And as these governors, even though the science is saying that what they're doing does absolutely no good at all, it doesn't matter. And to me, they're on a crash course and using this crisis to take out small businesses, because communism cannot have a middle class. They can't have a class that thinks and creates. That's impossible.
Yeah, it's. I wrote a book last year. It's called Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present. And the subtitle is How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. And there's a quote from Lenin where he said, socialism is a transition phase to communism. And Karl Marx says communism can be summed up in one sentence, abolition of private property. And so Marx and Engels wrote the Communist Manifesto. And then they wrote that they were alchemists of the revolution, spurring it into artificial crises. And each crisis must be worse than the one before, putting out of business more small capitalists. This will increase the number of the unemployed and bring about a commercial collapse, which will lead to a social revolution. And so here they're talking about intentionally putting out of business small capitalists. Why? Because they don't want a middle class. They want the ruling class and the ruled class. Goes back to Plato, where he said the ruling class is the head of gold and the arms and chest of silver. And then everyone else is the abdomen of iron and bronze, and they are the ruled class. And so when Lenin took over Russia, he killed off the middle class. They were called kulaks, K-U-L-A-K-S. They were the farmers, and he did this in the early 1920s. Lo and behold, yes, he killed them off, and he solidified his control of the government because they were gone. But then there was no one to work the farms, and they had a terrible famine in 1924 where millions of people died. But this idea of killing off the middle class is necessary to institute this socialism, socialism is the road, communism is the destination. And, but
we're heading down that road closer and closer and closer as we are tolerating what they're saying. Instead of fighting back, the American people were fighters up until recently when they became victims. And I think that has a lot to do with our education. Wouldn't you think?
One of the chapters I have in my book is post-World War II. You have Germany, France, and England give independence to their former colonies. And so you have brand new countries, you know, the Czech Republic and Romania and Hungary and Poland. They're all free from the Nazi rule and so forth. And so they set up brand new leaders with brand new, you know, countries and governments and republics. And they're free and they're working their way out of the post-war crises. And it looks promising, except the Soviet Union decides it wants to export socialism and communism. And so they would send KGB agents into these brand new countries and identify groups with grievances ethnically, you know, the Serbs, the Croats, the Bosnians, religiously, Sunni, Shia, Orthodox, ethnically or racially, economically. It really didn't matter. They would break them into groups of victims and oppressors, haves and have-nots. And then they would have protests that they would escalate into riots. And then they would co-opt the media with bribes and threats to blame the leader of the country for all of the problems. Then they would cultivate weak links in the military. And when the people in the country got panicky and confused enough, they would do a coup or a rigged election and replace the leader with a Soviet puppet. 45 countries fell to communism this way.
Wow, does that sound familiar?
And one of the things they would do is when they would co-opt the media is they would have the media release false polling data to show the popular leader as unpopular so that when they did their coup or their rigged election, people wouldn't challenge it. It was called a psychological operation or a psyops. We did some of this during World War II where we would drop pamphlets from airplanes saying the war is over, your side already lost, just surrender, when actually the war was still going on, but it messed with their minds and confused them. And so this developed, Goebbels used it, where he actually was the minister of propaganda for Germany. And it was this idea that how do you manipulate a whole country's perception and views? It actually grew out of...
Bill, hold that thought, and we're going to have a short break, and we will be right back, and I want to know what Goebbels did. You are listening to Karen Schoen, and this is the Prism of America's Education with my guest, Bill Federer, who has an incredible website called theamericanminute.com. Please go and sign up for Bill's incredible daily newsletters and get some of his books. They are fantastic. We will learn exactly how we are recreating the same atrocities that happened years ago.
There's a great deal out there that's become very obvious to us. The crime, the destruction of our cities, the defunding the police calls, the tearing down of America's monuments, the corruption. What's not so obvious is where they're getting all the money from to do all of this. I'm here to tell you they're getting the money from you and I because we're not paying attention to where we're spending the money. And this is a real problem. I've become more conscious in my life when I take out my wallet of where that money is going. I want to know what their values are. Are they given to a lot of the Marxist groups? Are they selling out overseas? Or are they supporting American patriotic businesses and people who care about the country? I'm excited to tell you about a new movement in our country, shoptotheright.com. So this is a group of patriots who got together with shared values. They're veteran-owned and operated. And they decided to create a nationwide database and do something about the problem. So you want to go check out all the businesses on there. You can search by category or geography or whatever on there. Go check it out, shoptotheright.com. We all need to start using this as a regular point of sale and a way to do business. And on top of that, if you have a business, you can list it there for free as well. The service is totally free. These guys want to make a difference. Now we all need to make a difference with our dollar. It's time, people. We got to do something about it. As I always say, time to get involved and get loud. This is how you do it right here. ShopToTheRight.com.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen, and you're listening to the Prism of America's Education with my guest, Bill Federer, an incredible historian who has done an amazing job of showing how our past really dictates our future. So Goebbels is the one who created this whole idea of how to destroy a nation. Can you elaborate on that, Bill?
So we go from the Wells Fargo wagon and the Sears catalog, and they're selling products, just listing the pros and cons of the product. And then they notice that if they make it look like this product is being used by lots of people and that it's the in thing, it's fashionable, maybe there's a pretty girl selling it, and it gives the implication that if you use this product, pretty girls will like you. And so there became this whole study of how you manipulate people to buy a product instead of just having a picture of it and listing some details on it. And so this created a whole studying on how to manipulate lots of people's perception by making it look like this is an in product. Now you move from that to 1938. Orson Welles, a actor, reads War of the Worlds as a radio drama. New Jersey is being invaded by Martians, and the whole country panics. We interrupt this program to say that. And everyone's looking up at the sky to see Martians, this immediate national panic. And so this was taken and say, okay, we can now market products, but we can also market through fear. And in politics, this is called fear mongering, where you intentionally stir up fear or tap into people's passions, but you're doing it to push a product or to push a political view. And so now we got Goebbels, and he realizes that if you can stage an event in a coliseum with 100,000 people and have a fear of an enemy, and then you make it look like everybody in the front's given the Hitler salute, and then it works its way to the back, and you're looking around, everybody you see around you is giving the Hitler salute, so you feel pressured to give it. Now the other people that are looking around seeing you doing it, and now they feel pressured to do it. And this was able to sway an entire nation. This was studied after World War II in the Solomon Asch conformity experiment done on college campuses, where they would pull 8 students into a room. 7 had been paid ahead of time to be actors. 1 was a naive participant. And the teacher would put on the front desk 2 cards. 1 card simply had 1 line on it, and the other had 3 lines, 1 longer, 1 shorter, 1 the same. And starting with the paid actors, they would stand up and convincingly say that the shorter line was equal to the line on the first card. By the time it got around to the 8th naive participant, 30% of them would deny their own eyes and go along with the group. They would doubt their perception. Here they could see with their own eyes, but they would want to fit along with the group. And so this was studied a little bit further with a wine tasting experiment where everyone in the room was in on it except one naive couple, and they poured vinegar in the wine. And this couple says, "This tastes terrible." They write on their little card. Well, one by one, the other couples would stand up and say, this terrible tasting wine had character, and it was robust, and it was good. And by the time it got around to this naive couple, they had scratched out what they wrote, and they put in that they agreed with the group. And then someone stood up and said, "You know, all they did was pour vinegar in." The couple that had changed their views criticized the person for saying that they had poured vinegar in it. This is a phenomenon called false enforcement. Once people buy into a lie, they will help enforce that other people comply with the lie. They will put peer pressure on this. And so this has now gone online, where little kids, you know, everyone wants to be liked and followed, and no one wants to be unfriended and unfollowed, right? And so kids will commit suicide if they were cyber bullied by this, you know, virtual online community, this peer pressure. is so strong. And so now we have elections. And the ability to manipulate through algorithms that will pull up all the negative articles on one candidate and all the positive articles on the other candidate. And the person that's viewing wants to fit in with what everybody else is saying. And so you can actually sway entire elections by censoring the internet and the news media. And so this is a phenomenon that basically has been perfected, this cycle in the election, where, you know, Fox News has gone along with the narrative and the Twitter censoring the accounts, you know, of the president and this, but it's all wanting to. Now it's interesting with the, Jesus says that you have to come out of the group and not care what the group thinks. He said, you have to love me more than being loved by your mother, sister, brothers, or any other group. In other words, you give up the fear of man and all you have is the fear of God.
And that is, I believe, is it in a nutshell why they are so afraid of God. Because if you live in the fear of God, then the fear of man is nothing. You can turn the page and do something else. But if you're living in the fear of God, he's going to see you everywhere, so you better behave.
Yeah, I love the one picture of all the baseball players kneeling in protest during the anthem. And one lone player was standing. And afterwards, they asked him why he was standing. He says, well, I'm a Christian. I only kneel to Jesus. And so this is the idea. If somebody does not have a relationship with God, if they do not have a personal awareness of him, then all they have is being accepted by the group. It's called the honor shame culture, and it's prevalent in Eastern societies, you know, in China and Japan, where fitting in with the group is so important, and being shamed in front of your group, people will commit suicide. And then in Islam, they call it the ummah, the community, the group. And they don't have a concept of right and wrong. It's what brings you honor from the group, from the ummah, is right. And what shames you in front of your ummah and your group is wrong. And so they'll murder their own daughter if she shames them in front of their group, their community.
That's the whole concept of the group think. You must be part of the herd. You can't step away. You can't make a different decision. If the herd is telling you to do something, it doesn't matter exactly what you said. You could see it with your own eyes, and it won't make any difference because the group is guiding you in a different direction.
So all of Western civilization goes back to the Bible, goes back to you are an individual, that you personally are made in the image of God, and that God says there is no respecter of persons in judgment. And so the idea of, if I were to sum up Western culture in one word, it's individual. If I were to sum up the rest of the world, it's the group. And so the other world, you know, the Islamic world, the communist concept, it's all, if you benefit the group, if you help the state get more power, the state, you know, honors you and promotes you. And if you don't, they'll use their media and everything to threaten and destroy you. But you have, the Western culture says that you have a worth and an identity and a purpose apart from any group, just simply because you're made in the image. You know, atheistic cultures, your worth is dependent on your utility. If you are useful to the state, your worth increases. If you're not useful to the state, or if you're a drain on the state, you're an old person and you're in the nursing home and nobody visits you anymore, you're a drain, you're worth less. Your worth goes down because you're not contributing. You get voted off the island type of thing, survivor program.
But could that be why in these communist states that we have in America, when the vaccine is being given out, they don't want to give it to the elderly, even though those are the ones that are the most at risk? Maybe they're just looking at it as a way of killing us off? and using the disease to say they don't have to do it themselves? Could that be a possibility?
That is. I mean, there's a whole deeper line of thinking you can go down in that direction. But it definitely goes back to this utilitarian thought that the old people are worth less. Hitler did that. So Germany, 1930s, the government provided the health care, and then their economy cratered, and they had to cut useless expenses, like useless eaters. These were the criminals, the convicts, the street bums. Why should you have to pay money to feed them? And then they got rid of the elderly and the sick. They called them Lebensunwertes Leben, life unworthy of life. And then they got rid of the, you know, insane and the retarded. And they're just getting rid of anybody that's not useful. There was even a quote in 1933 New York Times talking about the Nazi Ministry of Justice saying, "No life still valuable to the state will be wantonly destroyed." Mm. And then, based on their eugenics, where they said they wanted to improve the human gene pool, they decided to get rid of what they considered inferior races. And so they sent them to the gas chambers. And in their twisted thinking, it was Jews and others and so forth. And so we can see horrible things happen when you get a government that is in charge of your health care. And then they begin mandating, and then they begin deciding whose life is more valuable than somebody else's life. It's the French Revolution highlighted this. The motto of the French Revolution was liberty, equality, fraternity. Fraternity was their word for socialism. It's the group, the collective, the state. Equality can be understood two ways. In America, it was equal treatment before the law. In France, it was everyone having an equal amount of stuff. And if the fraternité, the group, the state, thinks you have too much stuff, it can use the power of the state to take away your stuff and redistribute it and even kill you, right?
Yes.
And so they chopped off 30,000 heads in Paris, and they killed 300,000 in the Vendée. It's considered the first modern genocide. And so that became the model for every socialist revolution since, that you violently kill off the old order to bring about this new perfect society, but which ends up being taken over by a dictator, Napoleon, you know.
So basically what President Trump is facing, if he doesn't do something, let's look at this both ways. One, he doesn't do anything and he allows, heaven forbid, Biden and the criminals to take over. What would America look like? Do you think that they would do the typical communist getting rid of all of the opposition and anybody in the old regime? Or do you think they'd leave them alone?
If you know, like an antibiotic-resistant virus, right? It comes along and then the virus improves itself, so it becomes tougher to get rid of. And then, you know, like they made Roundup to kill weeds, and then there's a certain strain of weeds that's become Roundup resistant, so it's a super weed, you know. And so what they've done is they've studied how to take over governments, and they've been perfecting it. I think that if they get in power, it'll be very similar to China going into Hong Kong. And even though Hong Kong had been free for 100 years and prosperous and all the freedoms of religion and peace protesters, they'll just come in with brute force and round up all the people that are dissidents, and they'll quietly disappear, and they'll just institute their agenda. And I think it'll happen very quickly. I could foresee lots of crises. I could see them ramping up the COVID and whipping it into a frenzy so that they'll have an excuse to shut down everything and monitor you in your house and vaccine credentials so you can't travel unless you can prove it. And I mean, I could see them using for very quickly. And so when you trace the money and the amount of Chinese influence that has been buying politicians, I think this is what Washington warned of, that the will and policy of one country will come to running another country. And, you know, in America, we play poker. In China, they play a game, I think it's called Go, but it's how to control an entire playboard with the fewest amount of pieces, but it's very strategic. In other words, we sort of fly by our pants and, you know, wing it, but their mindset is slow and methodical, and it's all how to gain power. I do believe there's voter fraud, I can get into it all, but I believe there was massive voter fraud. And if they get away with this, I don't think we'll have another honest election. I think it'll be a perfected. They'll work from the presidential election down. I mean, here's states where every Democrat lost and the Republicans won, but then Biden won. Yeah. It's like that makes no sense. And then some states where you have dead people voting, and other states where you have more people voting than there are registered voters. And then, you know, I'm concerned with, you know, Amy Comey Barrett. All the voter fraud could have stopped if she hadn't dropped the ball her first day on the job. There were lawsuits in Pennsylvania to not let any votes come in after 8 p.m. Why? Because that's what the Constitution of the state said. And she dropped the ball and didn't weigh in and let it go back 4-4 to the states. And they opened it up to let anybody vote after 8 p.m. so that they could have this massive amount of votes that came in after hours to turn the election. And it's highlighted the fact that judges are just simply politicians. We used to think of them as honestly upholding truth in an impartial way, but now we see they're subject to the same political pressures and that everybody, all the other politicians are. The other politicians want to get re-voted in, and so they'll bend to what the public opinion says, and these judges want to have everybody like them, and so they'll bend. It's sad, but that seems to be the state of affairs.
Yes, and I think that our civic education and the lack of understanding of the Constitution and how it should be implemented and how it should be used and the importance of it is surely lacking. Bill, we only have a couple of minutes left in this segment. If you were going to pick one book that you would think everyone should read of yours, which one would it be?
Well, the new book, Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, and then the subtitle, How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. But it's a broad overview. It goes back to 380 BC with Plato, goes back to the Pilgrims and how they were originally a company colony where they owned everything in common and nobody wanted to go out and work and they almost starved to death. And so they scrapped it and gave everybody their own plot of land. This made all hands more industrious. The women now went willingly into the field and took their little ones with them to plant corn. And so it goes through this history. It's a fascinating book. Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present.
Well, I want to thank you, Bill, for joining me today. I always learn so much when you are part of the show. And thank you for the work that you've been doing. And all I can say is keep it up, because the more I meet with our legislators, the less I feel that they know. Folks, you're listening to Karen Schoen, and this is the Prism of America's Education. My guest was Bill Federer. Please go to his website, AmericanMinute.com, sign up and get his newsletter and get his new book. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech. which is the right of every man, as long as he does not hurt or control the right of another. And this is the only check that ought to suffer, and the only bounds it ought to know. And that was a quote from Benjamin Franklin in 1722. Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen, and this is the Prism of America's Education. Over the past week, President Trump signed a powerful proclamation on religious liberty, and he said that justice cannot prevail without the grace of God. He is so right. He said, a society without religion cannot prosper. A nation without faith cannot endure, because justice, goodness, and peace cannot prevail without the grace of God. And the president declared that in his proclamation while calling the English saint, St. Thomas Becket, a lion of religious liberty. And when it comes to anything with religion, I have to ask Pastor Rick to please explain and tell us, who is St. Thomas Becket and why did the president single him out? Welcome, Pastor Rick.
Well, thanks, Karen. It's always nice to talk with you. And you are right to identify and to keep talking about this, the importance of religious liberty. We who talk about that often sound like we're a broken record or we can't talk about anything else. Well, that's not the case. The case is it really does matter. And when the president came out with this proclamation and recognition of Thomas Becket and the importance of religious liberty, he was pointing out that many years ago, Becket, who was an archbishop in England, he was born around 1120, often clashed with the king over the rights and independence of the church. You know, Becket defended that the church should be free. And the king always wanted to do what kings sometimes do and overstep their bounds and control things. And Becket kept to his convictions and wouldn't change that. And it ultimately cost him his life. A life well-lived and a cause well-served, because it reminds us that we too today need to stand up for our religious liberty, lest it be taken away. Now, we don't have kings in this country, but I think it's important for everyone. And I know this sounds a little cynical, and I don't mean it to. It was a little shocking when I first heard it. But when it comes to religious liberty and all of our rights, we need to remember that all too often our elected government officials will do whatever they can get away with. And we, the people, need to make sure that we are ever vigilant and not give an inch when it comes to our rights, because our federal government was formed with the express purpose of preserving our rights, not granting us rights, not trying to take them away, but their whole orientation should be, how do we preserve the rights of the people? That's why we formed a government in this country. And we today need to remember that. And we need to make sure that the people that we elect actually do that for us and not attack our rights or come up with schemes to limit them or to talk us out of them. Very important issue.
You are so right, Pastor Rick. And after what we have learned about how Dr. Fauci has been lying, we see this more and more often. Of course, that's part of what the communists do, because the ends justify the means. But the attack that is happening is directed exactly to the church and limiting the people from being able to go and perform their religious liberty, even though there is absolutely no evidence at all that being in a church has anything to do with the spread of the CCP virus. So they are using this is what communists do. They use any excuse to target anybody that has any religious belief, and they're forcing that religious belief on the peoples of the world, on the global people. Any country that promotes religion and promotes the safety of the unborn are a target. And this is what we are seeing, and it is up to us to make sure that this does not happen, to resist, just like many people did years and years ago. Religion was always a fight, wasn't it, Pastor?
Oh, yeah. It always is a fight. And we need to preserve and engage that fight, not because we like to be fighters. That's not the point. The point is we want to preserve what God has given us. We have a responsibility before God to protect that, to preserve that, to defend that, so that we don't lose it for ourselves and our children and our grandchildren. It's very important, absolutely vital to a free society. Absolutely vital.
Yes, and this is something that we must pass along to our children, and we must make sure, because when they go to school, there will be nothing of morality and nothing of God. And President Trump did another great thing, didn't he, Pastor Rick? He allowed people, he said, parents should have a choice in raising their children. Isn't that amazing? Amazing that we have to tell parents that they are allowed to choose where their child can go to school.
Yeah, it was very interesting. It got my attention because you don't often see this on the federal level. In far too many places, the schools are still not open for in-person instruction. And what the president did very simply is say, if your school is not available to your child for in-person instruction, then you as parents now have some options, and we will help you with scholarships for you to find this instruction that helps your child learn. And that's a big deal. We've seen the teachers union in various places resist going back to school and doing in-person instruction. And the president is clearly saying, look, the kids need to be in school and the parents need the opportunity to choose what will be best for them. And if the school system, the public school system where they live, isn't providing what their child needs, then we want to step up and help them have the opportunity to find a place that their child can learn, because it's really difficult. It's probably more difficult than I know for children to make up what's lost, because when they're at these formative ages, we don't want to lose a minute of that time. And we've already seen what we lost last year, and now we're experiencing it this year with places that aren't opening and allowing children to go to school. So it's a great move by the president. And it reminds all of us the importance of parents and their rights to find the best fit for their child. Imagine that. I think that's just terrific.
Well, we also have to be aware that communists do not believe that parents should have the responsibility for their children. As Hillary even said, it takes a village. So what they are looking at is that the state, the government, should be handling anything that has to do with your child. And I was reading an article the other day, and it said that in Washington, D.C., not the state, in D.C., that they just passed a bill that is going to allow the children to be vaccinated against COVID without telling their parents. That is a disgrace. A parent should be involved in every aspect of the child's growing up times, their formative years. The parents are the line of defense for the child, not the school. I remember as a teacher, I loved my kids every year, but they were a different group of kids. And the next year, I didn't really have a relationship with the kids that I left years later and later. Your family does, not your school. It is so important that the family be able to take control of the raising of their child and not turn it over to the state. Why would that be a bad idea to turn it over to the state? Any idea, Pastor Rick?
Many ideas, but one of the first things that comes to my mind as I listen to you describe that, and we all just shake our heads to think that the government wants to step in and do things to our children without the parents' permission. That is just outrageous. All of us respect the parents that we know who are raising children, and we don't step in to make those decisions for them. We let the parents decide. And the question that I found myself asking as I was processing this whole nonsense is, what is it that the government thinks about these parents? They don't trust them. They don't have any confidence in their ability to make good decisions for their children. Why do these people think they know better? They don't even know your child's name, and yet they think they know better what your child needs. Not only that, but the evidence that I've seen indicates that children aren't particularly susceptible to this virus and probably wouldn't benefit significantly from the vaccine because they are susceptible to it anyway. They don't catch it. So, you know, let's trust the parents. This whole idea of liberty it keeps popping up because we just are aware of this in so many ways. And I think all of us agree that liberty is hard. it's not easy because it requires us to be aware of what's going on, requires us to pay attention to what's happening and why, and it then requires us to make good decisions. And none of that is particularly easy in difficult times like we've been through, because we get all this information, conflicting thoughts here and there, and we wonder if they're telling us the truth here and wondering why they didn't tell us the truth there. But it's still our responsibility as a free people to step up and make good decisions. And one of the things that we should have learned in all of this is that many of our government decision makers don't believe we are good decision makers. And we need to recognize that and ask the question, why is it they don't trust us? Can't we, recognizing the difficulty, recognizing the fact that my neighbor might not do what I think is best, but liberty is hard. I have to let my neighbor do what my neighbor decides. But that's the nature of a free society. We have the opportunity and the responsibility to make those good decisions. And it just really is worrisome when in so many ways we see the government trying to step in and take over that. And of course, that's why I liked the president's decision about honoring Thomas Becket to remind us of how much religious liberty matters. And I like the decision about the scholarships to help parents have choices for their kids, because it matters that parents have these opportunities. The government shouldn't be having control of all these very important parts of our life.
I agree with you 100%. I don't think, you know, as you were speaking, I was thinking, and I don't think that they believe that the parents will give a bad decision. I just think that they believe that the parents will give the wrong decision, which won't be in line with the way that they want the outcome to be. They want everybody to think the same. They want everybody to do the same. They want everybody to fit in a nice, neat little box, because when you fit in a nice, neat little box, it makes it easier for me to control you. If you only have one thought, and that thought is the one that I have given you, then I know what the outcome of your decision is going to be. If I leave that decision-making process up to some unknown parents, how do I know that they're going to promote the message of the state or the message of the government, which must be told? And I think that that is what this is all about. What do you think, Pastor?
Well, I think that's certainly a strong possibility, because we know the background of some of the ideology that some of our political leaders express, and that all tilts in that direction. And it's extremely worrisome. It's hard to have even words to describe how we begin to feel when we see that kind of stuff happening, because control over our lives is not American. It's distinctly un-American. And how we ever elected people that are doing that remains a mystery. And it should be a wake-up call that elections matter, and we need to elect people that care about the things we care about. And in fact, that reminds me of on this whole religious liberty idea. I am pretty sure that one of the reasons we're seeing bars and strip clubs allowed to be open is because of the values of the people that are making these decisions. And obviously they don't value religious liberty. They don't value the church. And that should be a huge wake-up call to our country to say, how come these people don't value what we value? How come they have these contrary opinions about what is essential when we know better? And we need to vote differently and get the kind of people in there that care about the things we care about and value the things that we value. Otherwise, we can expect more of the same and worse.
I could not agree more. And as we are entering this new year, 2021, let us all pray. And one of the good things that I did see, Pastor, which was, I was really happy to see this, is that more people seem to be going back to church. So more people are beginning to understand the value of religious liberty and the value of practicing and being in lockstep with God. because that is the only way I believe we're going to get out of this mess that we have created. And I say we have created it because by turning our heads and not paying attention to our government, as Pastor said, we have allowed these people to get a seat at the table. And that was the wrong thing to do because they are in direct opposition as to what America stands for. And let us remember that as we go through 2021, and let us our thoughts be guided by what's right, what's moral, and under the words of Benjamin Franklin, let us remember that liberty only means you can do what you want as long as you're not harming someone else. That's not practicing free speech, that's not practicing liberty, that's not practicing anything when someone else is involved in your decision making. So let us change our way of thinking, let us get involved in our government, and let us turn the page and say, I will participate, I will be moral, I will practice the values of America. And let's start the new year that way. Pastor, would you like to end the show with a prayer for the new year? And goodness knows we have quite a mess. Thank you.
We do. But we can turn to the one who knows how to clean up messes, because he never made a mess worse. He always made every mess better. And that's what we need. And I agree with you. The only real remedy to the mess we're in is for people to turn back to faith and freedom and to follow the one who created this and gave us the gift of liberty. So yeah, let's pray for that indeed. Heavenly Father, we are grateful today that you did give us the gift of liberty. It's a gift that so few people down through history have enjoyed. But as Americans, you entrusted to us this great ideal of a free people, free to worship you according to our conscience, free to live our lives in the way that we determine is best for us. And we thank you for that liberty. And we pray in the strongest way we know that you would preserve that liberty for our land. We see it slipping away in all kinds of interesting and alarming directions. And we just pray that you would help us to accept our responsibility, to be good citizens, and to work to defend that liberty you gave us. And while we intend to do our part, we pray that you would do yours, because there are only so much we can do, and we depend upon you to move on the hearts of men and women across our land, to turn us back to what is right and away from what is wrong. And we believe that is the answer to a prosperous and happy new year. And we pray that for all of our listeners and all of our land, that as we turn to you, you would respond in the way you always have, and bless us and make us the people you always imagined we could become. In the name of Jesus, the one that we celebrate these days, amen.
Amen. Thank you all for listening. This is Karen Schoen and Pastor Rick saying have a very happy new year. Enjoy what life has to offer. And don't look at others, look at yourself, look inward first, because only when you are whole can you help others.